Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn. Joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. Hello. How are you?
I am not too shabby. Still kind of getting over a little bit of sickness. Still have an annoying little dry cough and kind of a sore throat when I talk too long, which, you know, shouldn't be an issue for a podcaster, right?
It's not like you haven't been doing it all day.
Yeah, exactly.
Or all week, I guess I should say, which is probably more realistically. Yeah, like, well, we'll get you out of here in like 50 minutes, and you can go right to sleep because you're not going to stay up late and play video games tonight. Because that would be a terrible thing to do with a 24-hour stream coming up on Saturday.
Yeah. We were actually talking about that, like how we were going to try to get ready because, I mean, my sleep schedule is a lot more messed up than Matt's sleep schedule, but we both love sleeping in. That is a huge, huge thing. And then so on top of the whole sleeping in, then it's like, okay, so we're going to have to get up early and then we're going to have to stay up for 24 hours. So when are we actually going to flip our sleep schedule? Because like, even when I was sick, a lot of it was like I was going to bed at like 1 or 2 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Like I'm never tired through the day. We actually were talking about this on the Joss Plays Discord that I'm never tired at night. I'm always tired during the day. I'm like full on hard to keep my eyes open, exhausted from whenever I wake up, no matter how many hours of sleep I got the night before. I'm exhausted until about 8 or 9 p.m. And then it's like brain wakes up or my second wind kicks in or whatever happens. Something happens around 8 or 9 p.m. that then it's like that's when my day starts. So then I'm awake for another like 10 hours. It's ridiculous. Maybe not 10, maybe 8 hours, but still. I'm definitely wide awake when I should be sleeping. So
you're planning to flip your sleep schedule. You know it's Wednesday, right? Because we got maybe like 2 good days. And I know you have raids on Wednesday, don't you?
I'm trying to figure out. Oh, yeah, we have raid tonight. I keep forgetting because we switched our raid night. We used to raid on Thursdays. Now we raid on Wednesdays and I keep forgetting. But yeah, like, so I need to figure out what day it's okay for me to wake up and be really tired. And I think that might be Friday. So I think I'm just going to have to set an alarm for like 7 on Friday and then go to bed really early on Friday night so that I get a real good long sleep before Extra Life. So I'm not going to bed at like 5 in the morning, waking up at 8 to do this 24-hour stream. That would be bad.
Yeah, because I know in past years, and this is actually something we haven't discussed, but in past years, we sort of roll out of bed and kind of do our own thing for a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't hit the ground streaming, I think is what a lot of people may not realize. Because I think we started streaming last year at like 10 a.m., but like,
I believe so, yeah.
Most of us, especially James, had already been gaming for quite a while. I usually, like, Caden's usually up around 7, so I might, like, you know, help him out a little bit and then, like, eat breakfast, have my coffee, make sure I've got plenty of healthy liquids around me and whatnot. And then, like, 8 a.m., just start, and then whenever we're ready to stream, we kick into stream mode. And
play like mobile things for a couple of hours before we actually get the stream going, and it's a nice way to like wake up and, you know, not have to worry about get it, because I think it was the first year that we did it. I woke up and then I had about an hour to get ready for the stream, and it was like all the other stuff associated, which is streaming and everything else, so I had that prep and I wasn't doing anything, and we started the stream a little bit later. It was either 10 or 11 a.m. So then I hadn't done the couple of hours of gaming ahead of time, and then so I think I only made it to about 20 hours that first year because it was just like I was not prepared and I hadn't done any gaming before the stream. So we've definitely realized that it's easier to game till about 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning the next day. And so in order to enable us to say, like, this is our 24 hours, we need to do a little bit of mobile gaming while we're doing other things on the front half of the stream. So
it's helpful. I always found that not only does it kind of, you know, help you get started so you can stop playing at 8 in the morning and go crash, but it helps you in a sense that you have the time and you're not distracted by, oh, my coffee's cold again because we've been, you know, playing games with our friends for 8 hours and jumping in between games and interacting with the stream and donations and all that fun stuff. What's going to be your mobile game though? Like I haven't decided yet. I don't know what I'm going to play first. I haven't really been playing a lot of like phone games lately.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. there is that Sailor Moon game that I kind of fell off a little bit.
But the go-to Sailor Moon game.
Yes, Sailor Moon has been my go-to mobile game. Also, obviously, I can play Hearthstone pretty casually on my phone, or even my iPad for that matter. So I think it'll probably be one of those two things, depending on what exactly I have to do. But like, having a game on my phone is so much easier because this year, because of the wonderful haircut, I mean, it takes me literally 5 minutes to do my hair now. So I don't have so much to do on the front end of a stream. So it's really helpful. But it'll probably be something on the phone because we have a really small bathroom. So don't have a lot of room for big devices. But something like a Sailor Moon or a Hearthstone will probably be my go-to mobile game. I haven't really been paying too much attention to the mobile space lately. There's so many of those games that are, and I'm not saying that Sailor Moon or Hearthstone don't fall into this category. They absolutely do. But the just the freemium type style of game with the gating and the, if you just spend 50 cents, then you can play more. And Hearthstone isn't necessarily like that. But, I mean, it's definitely air quotes free to play. But definitely you need to purchase packs quite often, I think, to be competitive at it. So, I mean, Hearthstone is not the worst offender by far, but I just find the mobile space is so covered in that, and it's not my favorite gaming space now because of that. I'd rather pay 10, 15, 20 bucks, whatever, for a game the way that we do on the 3DS for then it to be the game. Yeah. Like, end of story, so...
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking, I have the new demo that Nintendo launched for the new Pokemon game that's coming out, so I might check that out. I've heard really good things. But then I'm also like, Skyrim Special Edition comes out the day before, and I highly doubt I'm going to get to playing it on Friday. Maybe, we just said, like, it's helpful to play a mobile game so you can have your phone in one hand and, you know, the bowl of cereal.
Still be getting ready in the other,
But, I don't know. It's tempting to start another character in that game just to see what it looks like without getting sucked in.
Yeah, character creation is pretty easy, right? Because you can sit there and you can, like, eat and then, like, make your choices and then keep eating. And, you know, like, it's not like it's action-based, right? So that's where you have to have your hand on the keyboard and mouse at the same time. That's when you stop being able to actually get ready. But, again, this is we're going to talk about Extra Life a little bit more little later on. But did want to remind everybody off the top of the show that it is this coming Saturday. Mm-hmm. It will be streamed right here on twitch.tv/amovetv. We'll be starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. So make sure you tune in all through the day. We have some really fun rewards and we're trying something new this year. So we'll talk about that all later on in the show. But just in case for some reason you guys never make it to the end of TGI, just wanted to remind everybody right off the top of the show that it is this week. You can go to bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2016 in order to get to our team page where you can make a donation to the streamer of your choice. I believe Ryan and James, who is also Iagavos, who has done it with us for the last 5 years. So Ryan, James, and myself will all be streaming on Amove. I believe Matt is going to be running a D&D campaign, so he's going to be streaming that.
He's not just going to play Rocket League with us all day? Like,
no, we actually we have a friend in town, Matt Keogh, and so he and Matt and Adam are playing a D&D campaign right now. So I think they're going to set up some cameras up in the dining room and get some D&D action, like actual pen and pencil pencil and paper type D&D action going on for Extra Life, for at least a portion of it. Obviously, the other guys don't have to actually do the 24 hours, so I'm sure Matt will rejoin us at some point. But for the majority, at least at the start of the game, you can catch that on twitch.tv/pingpongpete. And so he's going to be doing some D&D campaign stuff throughout the day. So that'll be fun to watch too for you guys. So it's going to be a great day. Like I said, we're trying some new stuff that we're going to talk about later. But make sure that you tune in, and we appreciate, even if you can't donate, just spread the word. Let people know what we're doing. Our campaign is actually the weekend before the official Extra Life campaign, just because they decided, again, to schedule it over BlizzCon. So, our regular D&D campaign, our regular Extra Life campaign will actually be happening 1 week ahead of time. So we want to make sure that everyone is aware of that. So speaking of games that are way too involved that we probably won't be playing on stream, Civilization VI. Dude.
It made it on the list for 5 seconds, and then I told James, "No, take that off. You don't want us to fall asleep." In a way that, like, if Civ 6 was something we tried to play, I think we played one multiplayer game of Civ Beyond Earth, and it was kind of like, this is cool, but also like very long and time exhaustive, and honestly, if we want to talk about a game we're going to play pre-stream, this would be a good one, because every time you hit that enter button waiting for the damn AI to go, you can have a sip of your coffee, you can shove some Cheerios down your mouth, like, I don't know.
That might be something that I do this year, because I've had so much fun in Civ 6. So this past weekend, obviously, mm-hmm. we had the launch last week. This past weekend, I started a campaign at, I believe, around 4 p.m. It was after you and I had our Extra Life talk. I jumped right into a Civ game, and I was like, you know what?
Good.
I just, although I mean, so we had an Extra Life planning call, and then right after that call, I jumped into Civ because I just wanted to spend a big chunk of time. And I was kind of like, I don't know if I'm going to actually finish it today, but I'm just going to keep going and see what happens. And
oh no, you didn't, did you? You did it.
Oh, I finished it at about 7:30 the next morning because.
How? You did Extra Life practice run. Why? See, I did something similar to this, like, on a Tuesday night with Warcraft, where it's like, I haven't played Warcraft a lot. Justin's been talking a lot about it. You know, Garrett and them with their Embrace the Spoilers have been catching up. I need to play more Warcraft. And then I look at the clock, it's like, oh God, it's 3, and I go to work in the morning. And Extra Life is in a week. What the hell am I doing? So it's good that you did that. I think that's you're more prepared than any of us. So you finished a Civ game. Did you win? I don't want to skip to the end, but okay, you won. Cool.
I did. And so basically, what I wanted to do, I got to the point where it was like 1800 and something, right? And so I had kind of forgotten that time slows right down near the end, right? So the way it works right off the beginning is you might be going, like, each turn might be taking like 50 years of time. Mm-hmm. And then the closer you get to the modern age, the smaller those increments become. So it goes like 50 years a turn, 25 years a turn, 10 years a turn, then it goes 5, and then it goes 1. And then so for the last couple of hundred years, so your last couple of hundred turns are all just 1 year at a time. So I was at like, I feel like 1850, 1860, somewhere in and around there. I was getting close-ish to a victory, so I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to play it out. We'll just see how it goes. Like, I mean, it's like 3:30 in the morning, 4 o'clock in the morning, whatever, but I'm so close to the end. This will be fine. I mean, it's already 1860. It'll be another, like, 10 or 20 turns. Totally forgetting about the time scaling. And then so I ended up winning in 2003 at 7 o'clock in the morning, after 7 o'clock in the morning.
I didn't do that because that's crazy. but I will say
it was funny because we talked the next day and Ryan was like, I thought you left your computer on because he saw like my played hours on Civ.
I was like, she's still in Civ. There's no way she's still playing it. Like she likes to play video games, but she's still somewhat of a responsible adult. And then
I'm not.
Well, I like to give people the benefit of the doubt, okay? And, you know, it's just whatever. Everybody gets one. You turned your chip in with Civ 6. That's fine. I think that's great. When I booted it up, I had the opposite reaction where I was in for like 10 minutes and had deer in headlights mode where I'm just like, I forget how to play Civ. Oh, God. And then I'm like, okay, tutorial pops up. New to Civ 6. And I'm like, I'm new to Civ 6. So I click on that and then nothing happens. You're just presented with your settler and like a guy with clubs and you're just like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah, if you're new to Civ 6, if that's the button that you click on the tutorial, it is very hands-off. It's like every once in a while, an advisor will pop up and say like, hey, I see that you've done this thing, like you've researched this technology or you've built this building, one thing or another. And she'll say, this is new to Civ 6, except it's very RP, so she doesn't actually say here. But, you know, like, I don't think you've seen this before. We now have the ability to do this, which means this. But it pops up, you know, probably 20 times over the course of a game, maybe that, because it's basically just any system that they've tweaked. And one of the systems that they've tweaked is you can now build neighborhoods.
Yeah.
So they're basically districts. Like you choose, pardon me?
Districts.
Yeah, so you can choose a tile and essentially say, this is going to be like my faith district, and this is going to be my cultural district, and this one's going to be my education district. And then that's where you build all of your buildings. So you have to have a certain district before you unlock a certain set of buildings. Mm-hmm. And then obviously all of those buildings give you different buffs to your civilization. So it was interesting because it was another level of kind of prioritization. It wasn't just like, you've researched this technology, so now you have access to these buildings and you can just build whatever you want whenever you want. It's mm-hmm. It's another layer of complexity. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. And there are a whole bunch of different buffs that you can get through, say, like a religion based on the number of neighborhoods or districts that you've actually constructed in each of your cities. So
yeah.
You can say, like, if you have a religion might say you get an extra 2 production if you have more than 3 districts in a city or something like that. Because you can basically make your own custom religion too, which is really, really neat. And I can't remember if that's new in 6 or if that was in 5 as well. But basically you, when you found a religion, you can choose and you can say like, okay, these are the tenets of my religion or the buffs that I want any civilization or any city that follows my religion. This is what I want to give them. So you can kind of custom make your religion to buff your civilization the way that you want it to be buffed. But then you have to make sure that you are maintaining your religion in all of your cities and you're not letting other civilizations convert you, which is what Elizabeth kept doing. From England, or sorry, I guess Victoria from England, she kept trying to convert my people, so I destroyed her.
Oh, dear. That you basically went on a crusade. Interesting.
So that's another level of complexity they've added as well, is reasons for war. Oh. So I went on a holy war against her, because that gets less anger from other civilizations. Because, like, you could basically declare a... like a normal war, which, you know, gives you almost like a warmongering penalty. Or right. You can say you can have a holy war. You can have basically what's like a government type policy war. So something along the lines of like the Cold War, where it was like communism versus capitalism. So if someone has a different like civics than you do, then that gets you like less of a warmongering penalty. So it's still possible to be called a warmonger if you use some of these quote unquote justifiable reasons for war. But yeah, it's less severe. It doesn't last as long, and it's really, really interesting. I loved it. I really did. I had a great experience, and I keep wanting to play it, but I haven't found like big, huge chunks of time yet to go in and do it. Josh says he was hesitant to jump into it after Space Civ, which was, I believe, called Beyond Earth. I own it, but I don't really remember playing it that much.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't think I even finished a game.
I don't think I did either.
Playing multiplayer once on game night. I think a lot of people, it was very similar. It felt very much like a reskin Civ 5. And I think the best thing we can say about Civ 6, I think, that I really noticed in my limited time with it, is that it feels like a complete Civ that doesn't need expansions. Whereas in Civ 5, I could totally tell that, and from what other people were saying who were longtime fans, is like, oh, it's missing this, it's missing this, it's missing this. That was eventually added in the 2 mm-hmm. expansions that were put in. But just I've gotten to like the end of the classical era. And I've even noticed the biggest change for me is that your cities are more important, not just because of the district building, but also just the different management. Like, your citizens mean a lot more now. They're not just a number. You can actually tell, oh, okay, I have to have X amount of houses to continue population growth. I have to have X amount of amenities to make people happy so that, population growth continues. And there's trade routes, which makes sense to me now as opposed to before, where it was kind of, it was just a sliding bar that didn't mean much to me. Same with tourism. I've started to get into that where it's like,
well, that's tourism is actually the way that I ended up, the way that I ended up winning. And I think it's a great system. So basically the system of tourism is like you have domestic tourists. So that is people from your civilization that are vacationing in your civilization. And then you have, I can't remember what they're, international tourists. And those are tourists from other civilizations that are coming to you. Right. So basically you win when you have more international tourists than anyone else has domestic tourists. So in my case, my closest rival was Germany, who had, I think, about 125 domestic tourists. So then I had to build enough culture to attract 126 international tourists from anywhere, and then I would win. Whereas mm-hmm. I had 230 or so domestic tourists, and so that was the number that any other civilization had to beat. So, you know, I had the highest number of domestic tourists, so that's where the bar was set for all of the AI mm-hmm. versus, like, my bar was lower because the second highest is where my bar is set. So it's a really kind of dynamic and interesting system, and if you stop investing in culture, very quickly your domestic tourists will go somewhere else, and all of a sudden that changes the win condition. So mm-hmm. it's a really dynamic system, and it's really interesting.
Yeah, again, not very far. Looking forward to slowly making my way through Civ 6. But usually what I do with Civilization is the way that you've played. I play one game, I kill like an entire weekend on it, and then I'm like, I'm good. I'll come back later. And it's usually when they announce or launch an expansion that I jump back in. But I know folks that play these games pretty, like, this is their strategy game for until the next Civ comes out. Mm-hmm. And just having conversations with those folks, it's been really cool to see them happy that Civ 6 is really, really being received well. So I'm just like along for the ride. Like, I'm not a huge strategy fan, but I do appreciate Civ 6 and I really enjoy the Civilization franchise. But I'm just having a great time sort of interacting with the other civilizations in the game. I think the art style is really cool. I didn't think that the art style looked to be much of a jump in comparison to 5, but when you really get in there and look at it, the way the map transitions, and rather than a faded out fog of war, it actually, it turns into like a canvas map, and it's more sketched out. And I think that's an awesome effect and just so much more creative than just a fog of war that mm-hmm. we saw in other Civ games. And the barbarians seem to be a little more like dickish this time around for some reason.
Yeah, and I think that's, excuse me, that is a setting that you can tweak, I think, is okay. The actual aggressiveness and number of barbarians. Right. But I mean, I find in previous iterations of Civs, specifically in 3, I think there were a lot of barbarian settings in 4 and 5 as well, but specifically in 3, they kind of disappeared by the classic era, but barbarians they were there all the way up until the end of my game, because I found that settling, like, I got to a certain point where I didn't settle any more cities, that I had enough resources and enough things to manage that I wasn't really settling any more cities, and there was a significant portion of the map, both on the continent that I was on and the continent that the rest of the AI was on, because it was split, I think, 4 civilizations on one continent and then like 5 civilizations on the larger continent. And I was on the smaller one. Mm-hmm. There were significant portions of land not developed. And as soon as you have land that isn't actually claimed by a civilization, there's always a chance that a barbarian camp is actually going to show up. And that happens all the way through. And I find that with this style of Civ, with the direction that they've taken, there's a lot more land unclaimed than in previous iterations. So I really enjoyed it there. And there's so much more to Civ that, I mean, I could talk about Civ for literally our whole entire hour, sure. but yeah, there's a lot of different, there's still the traditional military way to win. There's the religious way to win, which is converting all other civilizations to your religion. There's a technology victory, which I was originally working towards, but was extraordinarily difficult. Mm-hmm. By the time I hit 2003, I think I still had probably like 10 more things to research in the tech tree. Mm-hmm. And not only do you have to research things, but you have to basically put a man on the moon and colonize Mars and do something else to actually get a technology victory. So it's not even just researching all the technology like it used to be. It's now, you know, doing certain things. I think at one point in Civ, you had to build a rocket So you had to research all the different rocket parts, and then you'd have a rocket, and then you could launch to the moon. And then that was your science victory. But now it's even more complicated than that. And it has to do with your districts. It has to do with a whole bunch of different research that you have to do. So, I mean, even after I had researched all of the tech tree things that I needed, I still would have needed another like 100 turns in order to be able to do all the things that I had to do to get a science victory. So I won a cultural victory long before that. But
It seems like, I wonder if the more complex victories are tougher because you're fighting against everyone else to win the easier, not quote unquote easier victories. Like
if I was trying to be so passive and so peaceful, and people just kept attacking me, and I was like, stop it. They were dicks. I killed them first.
Wow. Okay. I mean, it's always funny when we talk about Civ 6, like we're not terrible people. We just sound terrible. But I think that when I was playing, in the start of the game, did you find that your civilizations were just declaring war on you willy-nilly? Like, I was just going about my business. I was trying to be peaceful. Yes. I was Queen Victoria, and I was having a great time. And all of a sudden, two, Spain and, I can't remember the other one, might have been Norway, just declare war on me out of nowhere. And I'm like, whoa, dude, what up? I didn't do anything. I've been killing barbarians around you, setting up trade routes. What's going on? Yeah. What's going on?
It's because, at least for me, I had, and it'll tell you when people denounce you, the reason that they're angry at you. And one of the reasons early on in the game was that I had more wonders than the Chinese. So they were angry at me because my civilization was more culturally advanced.
Right.
So he declared a surprise war on me. I basically wiped him out. And surprise war is one of the warmongering things. Like, you get a really big warmongering penalty if you do a surprise war.
Sure.
So I wiped out everything except his capital city, and I was like, all right, we can have peace. I will agree to your terms, because he tried to make peace with me like 3 times. So I was like, no, I am going to take your cities. You will bow to me. And so then he ended up, I left him with one city, and I was like, all right, dude, we're good. But don't you dare do it again. And then, like, maybe 100 years later, he declared war on me again. And I was like, that's it. I'm wiping you off the map. I don't want to be like war. But no. Then a similar thing happened with England. They declared a surprise war on me. And then I declared a holy war on them, because I didn't really care about religion. I was just trying to block her from getting a religious victory. And so... What?
The chat room. Jealousy is not a reason for war, silly China. Joss let one city live so they could tell all the others.
Exactly. I was hoping they would have learned a lesson.
Okay, let this be a lesson to you, cities. Don't do that.
Yeah.
I will shut that shit down.
Jim saying now, never piss off Joss a second time. It's true. Everybody gets one.
You don't usually get one. But in Civ, like in Civ, like you poke the bear and the bear comes crashing down. I think, you know, it was weird because they were declaring war on me, and I'm like, hey. And they didn't do anything. They just declared war to kind of like, you know, see my reaction. And I killed one of their units. I killed a scout, and I'm like, I'm not going to go kill your bases, but if you put a scout in my area, I'm going to kill it. But this was when we had declared war. But they just tried to make peace, and they're like, okay, let's be cool. But they're just asking me to make peace. They're not like sweetening the pot. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm not going to make peace with you. You declared war on me. I'm not going to come trash your doorstep, but just don't declare war and make a big huff and run around and you know, hold your breath so all the other civs can see you acting like a baby civ. and they want to just make peace, no willy-nilly. So I'm like, no, you're going to give me a whale each turn. I want a whale. And I want it just delivered. Just because. I want a whale. I want it delivered at each turn. And you know what? Better be big. So they didn't like those terms. So we just basically were at like this silent war for a very long time. And eventually I just got sick of seeing like the unhappy face in the right-hand corner. And I never got the whales. I had to give them like my chocolate for the whale, which seemed like a fair trade.
When you think about it. You would think so. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What could you do with whales?
I think you ride them, don't you?
Or, oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, because chocolate seems like... I think I'd rather have chocolate than a whale. I don't really know what I'd do with a whale, but
you can't ride your chocolate into war, Jocelyn. Like,
well, you can't ride a whale into a land war.
Well, you need to play as Queen Victoria. because she's got some.
Oh, I guess she's pretty naval. She's what? She's naval focused.
I know, just the way you said it was really weird. She's pretty naval. Ah, she's very naval. Hello, I'm Queen Victoria. She doesn't even sound like that because she's like young Queen Victoria. But yeah, no, I was Queen Victoria and we got some whales and yeah, it was pretty good. I have not finished the game. I don't know. I usually find when I play Civ, when I don't know what victory I'm going for, I just decide I'm going to be a
peaceful. That's your first mistake. It's a strategy game. How can you go in with no strategy?
Because I don't know how to play the game yet. So my first strategy is just to kind of like go and kind of keep an eye on the rankings and stuff, because that's really cool. I don't think they did this last time. You can look at the rankings and it'll tell you before, I think, if someone was ahead, but it'll actually tell you how farther ahead, because the bar fills up showing like where they're at and where you're at in terms of the world ranking, like whether, so Russia is first for cultural war or cultural victory, and the bar is filled about halfway through and you are fourth, and I think that's without giving you too much information.
You can get all the information though.
Oh really?
If you because that's like the overview page, and then if you look, there's tabs at the top that are for each of the different victories, so it'll tell you like who's gonna win for like certain different kinds of victories. I think the score victory might be the only one that doesn't have a tab because it's pretty straightforward. I think you can actually hover over and see on the overview page what everybody's score is. And that one's really straightforward. That's just like if you hit 500 turns, I think. Mm-hmm. I think it's 500 turns. If you hit 500 turns and nobody's won, then the civilization with the highest score wins. And the score is a combination of everything, right? So it's a combination of how much land you own, how many cities you have, what your population is, like how big your military is, how many civilizations you've conquered, just all of that, all your cultural stuff, like everything gets rolled into an overall score, which is used basically as a tiebreaker if you hit the turn limit. So I can't remember if that one has a tab or not. Right. I wasn't really concerned with that because, like I say, I think my game went to about 350 turns, so I wasn't anywhere close to a score victory, and my score was like 200 points above anybody else's, so I wasn't really worried about that one, so I can't remember if it has a separate tab or not, but
cool.
You can definitely go in and click on each type of victory, and it'll tell you, like, for instance, the religious tab will tell you how many civilizations each civilization has converted. And the religious victory, I think, is probably the hardest out of any of them, because the religious victory, you have to spend faith. You don't spend gold or production resources in order to get the units that you need to go spread your religion. So you need to be very heavily invested in religion over anything else. Mm-hmm. And then the only way to win is basically by converting the entire world. It's not even like a majority of civilizations. Like you have to convert every other civilization in the game in order to actually get a religious victory. So it's really difficult.
I think a religious victory would be, see, that's the other thing when I played this game. You're right. Having a strategy going in is certainly an ideal strategy game, but even, you know, trying to have that type of fun by saying, I'm going to go for the religious victory to see what it's like. And that seems like an interesting way to win, to just, you know, focus on religion, spreading that religion and kind of seeing how far you can get and seeing what obstacles pop up. Because like you said, like you run into a lot of obstacles when trying to tell people how to, you know, live their lives. Because that's basically what you're doing. You're having the missionaries go out and say like, no, you don't want to do this. You want to do this. Mm-hmm. And doing that without sort of a game, like strategy games sometimes just devolve into, you know, war, right? Mm-hmm. So doing that religious victory without also having like an army backing them up, but I don't know, I think it's really interesting, and I need to play more of it, but you're right, it's totally one of those, I don't have 4 hours or even an capped time frame to play this game right now. And I tried playing for like a half hour at a time, and it's, you usually go like an extra half hour if you are strapped for time, but it's always that one more turn mentality, because the game of Civ doesn't work in sort of a linear fashion. It's like a very slow building of layers, so you don't actually realize that you're doing more each turn until it's, you've been playing for 5 hours and you're, you know, 100 turns in. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where I'm at now, where I'm at the point where more interesting things are happening every turn. And that's where the game gets really fun, where you have to think about a bunch of different things and, you know, maybe pick a victory path at that point.
We have a couple of questions in the chat room that I want to answer really quickly before we move on to Battlefield and Thumper. But first, Josh was asking if we could actually change what victory conditions are in the game. Yes, you can. You could do fully customizable games, including things like barbarian difficulty settings, with win condition settings, how many civilizations, how big the world is, what kind of a world is it? Is it Pangaea, where there's just one continent, or is it, you know, like multiple different continents? Or sometimes I've even played archipelagos, so it's like a whole bunch of tiny little islands, so you're basically forced into a naval sort of an army, I guess. So yeah, the actual fully custom games, and you can have those where you play against friends, or you can do those where you play against AI. Yeah, it's fully customizable, which is great. The other question that we have from the chat room was asking from Pete in the UK, how good is the AI? It's really good. So I think I played with my AI a little bit easier than normal, and it was fairly challenging. I think I could have probably gone just above normal, and there are, I believe, something like either 7 or 9 different difficulty settings. So you start basically from like Settler, which is the easiest one, which is like, I've never played any kind of simulation or strategy game before. Make it super duper easy on me, all the way up to Deity, which is like just crushing. Like, you're probably going to be dead in the first 10 turns. So there's everything in between. And I played, I think, one setting below normal, and I probably should have played 1 or 2 settings above normal, because the AI was moderately challenging, but the military tactics weren't there. The tech wasn't really there. I was basically ahead in every category except for I think religion, because basically the only reason that I founded a religion was to block them from converting my civilization. I wasn't trying to spread it at all. So yeah. I think it's really good. It's a really robust AI system. So
yeah, I played on Prince, which I think is the recommend. That's technically normal. And I just, you know, picked whatever civilization I thought would be interesting, and picked. I always usually start with the world map. I don't know why. I just, you know, it seems
like. Yeah, I
like
think it I just started with standard or yeah. something. Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm enjoying it. I'll play more of it, and I'm looking forward to playing it more than I have played other Civ games, because I always feel like I drop them too soon, because one game isn't enough to sort of get the sort of idea, because it's been years since I played Civ, so I need one game to get back into it, and then maybe one game that's my, like, this is my main game, you know?
Yes, yeah.
So.
But yeah, you're right. It's definitely not the kind of game that you can sit down and put, you know, half an hour into. You need kind of big chunks of time. Otherwise, I find that I either forget or don't formulate strategies very well, just because it's like, if you're constantly picking it up and putting it down and, you know, coming back to it, you're just like, oh, wait, what was I planning on doing? Like, what was my plan for this city? Like, where was I going to settle next? Like, and all of that can kind of get lost if you're leaving and coming back too much. So I think it does deserve a good 2 to 3 hour chunk at a time, and sometimes it can be hard to find that kind of time to sit down and play a game. But
yeah,
I'm interested to hear your thoughts now that you've had a little bit more time on Battlefield 1.
So Battlefield 1 launched last week. I played a bunch over the weekend. I played another portion of the campaign, the plane missions. I gotta say, I love the history that is in this game. I cannot stress that enough. The history that's in Battlefield 1 is just really well done. And I think some might say, oh, it's not that well done, but it's just such a nice change from, like, futuristic war, not based on anything but, you know, our kind of creativity. I don't know. Sometimes, like, Call of Duty Black Ops 3 kind of looked a little like it. I didn't get through it because it just felt like, I'm just shooting robots now. This isn't interesting.
Yeah.
The plane missions were really cool because you actually got to play as an American, kind of a cocky American who takes over a plane and they go off, and they're like self-contained stories. So that's what I really find interesting. And you can play each campaign in about an hour to 2 hours. And it's just a really cool contained story that is, has like a prologue, a narrator over top of it, kind of introing, sort of giving you some behind the scenes of like how airplanes worked in World War One, and the fact that airplanes were only a decade old technology, and that, you know, pilots had an average lifespan of so many days, you know, like 17 flight days, which is crazy. You know, the missions were varied. It's not just you're going to be in a plane for four missions. There was actually some portions of the mission where you're outside of the plane for reasons I won't spoil, but I mean,
yeah,
probably figured out. But it's just been a lot of fun, and I played some more multiplayer. The multiplayer seems, you know, kind of balanced in a way that you're not feeling upset for losing. Although it's it's still an issue. I'm playing on Xbox One. And I'm really enjoying just the, I don't know, I know a lot of people say like, oh, you're not playing on PC, you're not playing keyboard and mouse. I find that people are too good with the keyboard and mouse. I cannot keep up. I cannot play one game for...
That's fair enough.
Yeah. So I think, you know, the quote-unquote handicap of a controller, like sort of like capping you at a specific point, I can kind of keep up with those folks with the controller. Because I play a lot of Halo, right? So mm-hmm. I feel like maybe... That's helped me stay on an even playing field. Although there are those folks that can like nail a headshot from across the map, and it's like, well, sniped. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, there's always gonna be people that are way better than you at any given game, and as long as you can remain competitive in your chosen difficulty level and your chosen skill sort of thing, then I think that's fine. Like, as long as you're still having fun, you don't have to be the best of the best.
Mm-hmm. No, I am having fun. I think, and it feels weird because now that we're talking about a game that's based on history, it feels weird saying like, yeah, I'm having fun, like doing trench warfare and kind of crawling through the mud. It's just, but we will talk about it like we talk about any game. It's supposed to be fun. If it wasn't fun, then we probably wouldn't be talking about it. But I've been really enjoying the operations mode still, where it's based in historical facts and gives a bit of a story overview. And it's a push-pull
that's
mode.
Like, that's what the campaign is called, or is that the multiplayer?
No, this is a multiplayer mode. So operations is, so you have the campaign, but then you have operations mode, which is based... It has a bit of a history flair over top of it, so when you load it in, you know whether you're going to play either as the Germans or the Americans for one scenario, right, or the Italians and you know, another country. And it kind of, as it zooms in, you kind of see like, okay, you're playing as the Germans, gives you a bit of German overview in terms of this battle. And it's a push-pull until you either win and push the enemy or push the defendants back. And then the game doesn't even end. It kind of moves over to the next map and continues the story like, oh, the Germans failed to defend against the Brits. And, you know, it continues on in that light. So it's a bit of a longer match, and Battlefield matches are super long, but it kind of gives you that historical flair alongside the multiplayer, which, I don't know, I'm not one for senseless multiplayer.
I feel like that would be a little bit more satisfying. Like, you feel like you're invested in your team, you're invested in the match, and you're working towards something a little bit more than just like team deathmatch, you know? Yeah. Like,
and there are those modes. So folks who want to just go in and play a specific, you know, mode or map, Conquest seems to be the biggest one, where it's like there are 5 points across the map and you have to cap them. And, you know, the longer you hold them, the more points you get when you kill people. And those maps are really cool because they're, like we talked about, the catch-up mechanics that it has, where if your team falls behind enough, like an armored train will spawn, and you can get in the armored train, and it kind of like works in a bit of a semicircle across the map, and you can actually take points with the train pretty handily. And that allows your team to catch up in a way where you don't have to worry about suddenly getting a boost of... get good. You can just kind of like get in the train and do some, you know, some quick kills. But I've just really enjoyed the operations and being able to sort of, it's just really cool because it sort of sets up, you know, the war really well, in that you are, as a defender, defending these points in little towns and, you know, blown out buildings, trenches, and it captures the time frame really well. And there are moments where you're in the trenches and then all of a sudden, you know, down the hill, you hear people, you know, yelling and screaming and running over, over the hill towards you, like a giant line of people. And it sets up those moments really well. Whereas Conquest is just kind of like, blah, dots on a map. You're just going to spawn and throw yourself against this point until you capture it. So I really appreciate that they kind of went the extra mile with Operations to kind of give, you know, deciding to go back to a historical setting and applying it to as many modes as they could, which is really nice. You know, as opposed to some of the other games that are coming out this season, like, you know, Titanfall 2, which is getting great reviews, Call of Duty Infinite War or Infinity Warfare, whatever the heck they're calling it.
I'm calling it Infinite, but I could.
I think it is Infinite Warfare.
I think it's Infinite because Infinity has a Y on the end, not an E, so.
Well, yes. No, I wasn't, like, thinking it was pronounced weirdly. I just couldn't remember. But, you know, and that's the one with Jon Snow. So he's, like, he's just declaring war on the world, which is interesting. I'm really enjoying it, and I'm actually kind of excited because they've actually announced, like, the season pass, which is an astronomical amount of money. Again, like, EA loves to just ring you through, but they've announced
season pass pretty much the price of the game.
Yes, it's $60. Oh, so
that's frustrating.
Yeah, they are giving us a free map in December, but the season pass will actually add new countries, new operations. So that's kind of why I'm like, damn it, I'm going to have to at least, like, I don't want to just buy one portion of the season pass. But then again, I think if it's just, if they're adding like one, if they add an operation every time they add out an expansion, I might get it. But if they just add like one expansion, because that's what it sounds like, they're adding the French and the Russians, because those guys aren't actually in the game yet. So I don't know. I'm really digging it. And the effects, it looks great on Xbox One. Like when you're crawling through the mud, like your gun actually gets all mucky and stuff, and your character, it's really weird. And just the act of like putting your gas mask on, if someone uses a poison grenade, that's really cool. But yeah, like I was playing with a friend and he just all of a sudden like dives down. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm getting my gun all muddy. I'm like, really? Like, it's bad enough there are bullets whizzing by you. You have to get your gun dirty. I mean, come on, man.
It's more authentic.
It is very authentic. That's the thing. It's a very authentic game, and they did a great job sort of... I'm looking forward to finishing going through the campaign more, because I think it's... They've actually done a really good job with it, which I was surprised. I was worried it was just going to be like, yeah, here's some trenches. Shoot at this guy for a bit, and then we'll move on. But no, it's actually well thought out and well put together. So
that's great. I'm glad you're still enjoying it. Jim in the chat room said, I like the idea of games of giant teams because it's less likely someone will notice I suck. I love multiplayer with giant teams as well for the exact same reason. I feel like it gives you an opportunity to learn before you actually jump into more serious, more competitive modes. And that's why I loved Ashran in Warlords of Draenor before they screwed it all up in 6.2. But before they screwed it all up, I really, really enjoyed it. And it was because the teams were so big that you were allowed to learn without being singled out and yelled at. So I love that they have implemented something like that in Battlefield 1. That seems awesome. But the other thing that you're playing right now that I am not playing is Thumper. We talked about this a little bit, I believe it was last week. On the Patreon Hangout, that's right. So yeah, we did talk a little bit about Thumper. I don't think it's my thing, but I'm interested to see what your thoughts on it are.
We talked a bit about it on the Hangout because I think Jimmy was playing it pretty you know, a good amount of it. And the way I would describe it and the way I described it last week is as an endless runner, and it's very music-based, but I think the best way to describe it is as an endless runner, but with levels. So you're not constantly going, seeing how far you can get. You are progressing by level by level, and it actually starts with a couple of simple mechanics. So there's a track, and it weaves and bobs, but you're like this weird bug thing, and you're moving at a pretty good click, you know, forward. And I think the first level is just, you know, hit A to the beat. Or not to the beat, but to basically thump on the note that shows up, or the glowing button, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's very tempting to call it a rhythm game, and it certainly feels like a rhythm game at certain points when the music sort of lines up with your actions. But I think Endless Runner is the best way to kind of like sell it to folks. And it just progresses from there. So the first level is just like hitting the beat, which is pretty simple. And then the next level, they add, you know, turns. So there's these sharp turns where you have to kind of lean away from the turn and hold the A button. And if you time it correctly, you'll get like a little bonus. So you can just kind of, if it's a short enough turn, you can kind of just like scoot your scoot your beetle butt into it and just keep on trucking. And then you get to level four, halfway through four, and the game just like runs, and it levels just stream one after the other. They're adding like mechanics and putting them together in ways that are very complex. It's not a one hit you die. You get two hits, and you do get a chance sometimes to rejuvenate that shell that you lose when you get hit. So it's not as punishing as some people have made it out to be. It's actually very fair, and once you get the hang of the sort of the rhythm mechanics, or the pattern, and you just keep on trucking. And when you lose, you don't feel like it's the game punishing you. You feel like it's just, damn it, I forgot that it was like AA. Left, right kind of thing. So
yeah,
it's just been a really good sit back. I've got 10 minutes and I'm not competing against anyone. I'm just strictly trying to progress, and levels are made up of many sub levels, and finishing a sub level takes anywhere from a couple minutes to maybe even 30 seconds if you can get in one go. So it's just a very good sort of sit down, play bite for a size little bit. Yeah, experience. Bite size. Exactly.
So how many levels are there in total?
I think there are 8 main levels. And then I think each level has like, gosh, I think 4 had like 20. And it kind of progresses as you go, like 20 sub-levels. So the first level only had like 10 sub-levels. And then the second level had like maybe 15 sub-levels. And there are boss levels as well. Okay, Jimmy's saying 9 levels, so there's 9. I don't think I'm going to get to 9 levels, because I'm stuck on 5, and basically there's like 30 sub-levels in 5, and it is brutal. So you start to get to a point where it's like, nah, you can't screw up anymore, because even missing a mechanic is going to cause you to die and you know, lose your shield, basically. So I think the mechanic is you have to hit. So when the circle appears, the laser circle appears, you have to hit all the notes, because if you miss the note, the laser circle's like, nah, I'm going to laser circle you now and then hit you. And God forbid, if you had already like run into a wall or something, you're going to die and have to start over. But there's like leaderboards and stuff. You have
to hit all the buttons to turn off the lasers, basically.
Exactly. And the music plays really well with it. Like, it's a very good headphone game. There's a lot of like, I don't know if I would call it like techno or like a trance, but it's kind of like electronic music, but very heavy bass electronic music.
Yeah.
It's a great way to get psyched, because I'll play like, I just want to relax for a bit. I'm going to play some Thumper. But now that I'm level 5, it's like, no, I want to get
no more relaxing.
No, you can't relax. It actually might honestly be a really good extra life game when I'm super tired. I'll fail miserably, but at least I'll be awake. I
play horror games and you play Thumper.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I think, I don't know. I it's just been a lot of fun, and I'm one of those folks that loves to play these smaller, you know, bite-sized titles, because sometimes I just get sick of long games, but get sick of not being able to finish them. You know, like, The Witcher is still, like, in the back of my brain. Like, you didn't finish the DLC. None of it. You suck. Yeah. Go finish the DLC, you know? I think Val was talking about it in the Discord, and that's what kind of got me thinking about it again. But it's nice knowing that I can play this game for a little bit and make some progress. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, we talked about, like, Civ 6, Battlefield 1, like, it takes 40 minutes to finish a match.
You know?
So you got to have time. And it's not something I have a lot of these days to sort of pour into multiple games, let alone one.
Yeah. And speaking of DLC, I think the Thumper soundtrack is available. As far as I know, it's available on Steam and iTunes, I think.
Oh, I know someone was saying they found it on Spotify.
Oh, maybe Spotify is what I'm thinking of. But it is available outside of the game if anyone is interested. So on that note, I just wanted to remind everybody that you can go to etch.amove.tv or shirts.amove.tv to get swag from all your favorite Amove shows, including Gamers In, obviously, but also The Angry Chicken and Into the Nexus. So head on over to one of those stores and pick up all of your favorite things. I was drinking out of my Gamers In wine glass last night, which is very fancy, and I love it very much. So all the glasses come with a shirt logo.
Might be the shirt logo. I can't remember.
They come with the show logo on one side and then the Amove Network logo on the other. So, go on over to etch.amove.tv or shirts.amove.tv to pick up those things. That brings us to our topic of the week this week, which is early reviews of games. Bethesda has come out and made it official. They are not giving any more early review copies to anyone. Outlets are going to be basically receiving their copies one day before release. So expect to see reviews only coming one day before release. Ryan, what do you think about this choice from Bethesda? They did this a little while ago, right? With Doom.
Yeah, Doom, outlets were saying, we didn't get review copies, we're not going to get review copies till the day before. And a lot of people see that as sort of a sign that a game is of poor quality. And Doom ended up being...
I think a lot of people are crazy.
Because I'm pretty sure Blizzard doesn't even send review copies for their game, you know? So I think, but that the internet is part crazy. Like, we're all a little part crazy when we're on the internet. Jocelyn, we've all been there. We've all been part crazy before. So I think that when people latch onto that, they're just, you know, they're looking for something to, you know, like a sign that their favorite game might be terrible without, you know, kind of knowing, because people worry about this. People are very attached to the Doom franchise, and Doom ended up being probably the best first person shooter I've played this year, if not the best I've played in a very long time, campaign wise. But it's just Bethesda saying, like, look, we're not gonna do it. Like, well, you guys can enjoy it alongside the reviewers, and the reviewers can decide whether to, you know, rush through it, put the review out. That's an argument I've seen, where, you know, some outlets are going to basically say to an intern, like, okay, you need to play this game for 24 hours and then tell me what you thought about it and then tell the internet. I don't think, you know, not giving out review copies early does for some outlets encourage that behavior, which may result in a review that's not quite as favorable, because I always find rushing through anything kind of like colors it in a weird way. So I'm kind of worried about that. But then again, I don't really pay attention to reviews. I just pay attention to the noise, because it's hard to ignore the noise. Like with Titanfall 2, it's getting very positive reviews. And I wasn't even thinking of picking it up. I was going to kind of go at it later. But now I'm thinking, like, oh, the single player is being heralded as one of the best campaigns ever made. And it's made by the guys who made Modern Warfare. And it might be worth checking out now. But it's a tough one. And Bethesda has every right to do this. I think it's weird that outlets are kind of being like making a huge deal about it.
Well, of course they are. This is basically screwing them over. There's now no reason to go to IGN before the release of a game. Like, they're going to lose traffic. They're going to lose readers. Like, people are going to buy games and make their own decisions now, as opposed to relying on sites like IGN. So, of course, IGN is freaking out.
Well, it's not just IGN. I mean, but Eurogamer was like, anti-consumerism. Like, whoa, guys, you know, like... They're not trying to trick you. Both
video games and consumers existed before they did, right? Like,
yeah, I just, it's really like, we can all discuss this like adults and say, like, look, it's shitty that, you know, you guys aren't going to be able to cover this. You can still cover the game ahead of time. You just can't give a definitive, you know,
you can cover the game. Yeah, you can cover the game ahead of time. You can, if you are a consumer, you can wait. There's no reason that you have to pre-order a game. There's no reason that you have to pick it up day one. You make the decision based on how much you as a consumer trust the company that's putting it out. Personally, I think Bethesda does a freaking awesome job with their games. Skyrim, Fallout, Doom, like you mentioned. I have so much faith in Bethesda that until they give me a reason not to, I am absolutely going to pre-order their titles because they do such a good job. Same with Blizzard, and the total opposite for anything done by EA. If EA said no more copies for games ahead of time, I'd be like, okay, then you don't get my money ahead of time, and that's the way that it should be. That is good consumerism. That is informed consumerism. Yeah. And I think what we've been doing for a really long time is we've been getting reviews way ahead of time without review copies being what ends up being released. Like, sometimes there's big bug fixes or patches on day one. We've seen all kinds of stuff that in some cases makes it a totally different game day one than it was when we were seeing reviews, and reviews have just brutally murdered some games for no reason because they're just so far ahead of time. So I think this is a fantastic move from Bethesda, and it is not going to stop me from pre-ordering anything because they have earned my dollars over the years by putting out great content. I don't need IGN to tell me that.
Yeah, no, that's a solid, I agree with that statement, basically, like that stance of Bethesda has earned our trust. And honestly, there might be franchises that aren't as proven from Bethesda that we might say, okay, I'm gonna wait and see what people think. And the shitty part for IGN is that we don't have to wait that long for someone's opinion. You can start getting opinions from people actually playing the game right away, thanks to websites like Twitch, YouTube, Twitter, Facebook. I can know almost right away, as from an aggregate, whether a game is good or bad because the internet basically plays the whole thing in the first hour of its release.
It's like crowdfunded.
It is. And
whatever.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate for IGN as a or any of these sort of these websites, including, you know, not necessarily our own. We don't get early release copies of games usually. Sometimes we do and we can share our opinions, but
I think Until Dawn was probably the last big one that we did that we had a review copy of.
Yeah, and I think that and that was even post-release, like they had a couple laying around and we were like, hey. But I think that I feel bad for some of these websites that depend on this, but honestly, with Bethesda's titles, the way they make those games where they are like coming off the line hot, the day one patch, like you mentioned, makes the game very different, maybe even playable. Like Fallout 4 is this huge, massive game, and they are still patching it to this day. So giving them that little extra bit of time where it's gone from Gold Master to release, man, I don't blame them. And I think more companies that are making these large products, products that rely on online servers to be running with a good crowd, those companies have every right to say, like, look, we're going to hold this back. But, you know, Nintendo's been very good at releasing early preview copies and early review copies to reviewers because they build that into their schedule, you know, when they're making a game. And they're not making as big, complex worlds as some of these other games. But, you know, Breath of the Wild might be a game that we see not go to a lot of people because it'll have a lot of those sort of, because it's a huge game, a lot of mechanics. But I don't think Bethesda's crazy because of the type of games they make. They need every second. And they're still getting the review copies the day before release. So at least on the day of release, you can have some thoughts.
They can have first, exactly. They can have first impressions. Like, I mean, if you are getting a review copy 24 hours before the general public, that's usually going to be enough to put out something that is like first impressions, like this seems good, this seems bad, whatever, like yay or nay, thumbs up, thumbs down type of a review system, which I think is the kind of thing that we should be moving towards in terms of game reviews anyways. Like, yes, purchase, no, don't purchase, yes or no. So I feel like it's you can still get some sort of a review out, probably still in time for people to make informed pre-order decisions if they're the kind of people who want like gaming news outlets to tell them what to do. Then gaming news outlets are still going to be able to tell them what to do in time to pre-order, but it just won't be either based on something that the game no longer is by day one or it won't be possibly as thorough. And I don't really think that there's any problem with that. It also leaves a lot of space for gamers to then make their own decisions and make up their own minds about a title before they've had everything basically tainted by some of these websites, whether that's, you know, positive or negative. There, you know, you're going to have a bias going into a game if you've read about each and every little mechanic and each and every little storyline, which is what a lot of these things were doing. So I think it's a great move from Bethesda. I hope more companies follow suit, although it's probably a bad idea for EA because they have such a terrible reputation. I feel like their sales would probably hurt a lot. But yeah, companies that are proven like Bethesda, I don't see why there's any reason not for like for all of them to not follow suit.
Yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of companies will kind of go down this path as games get more complex because like Ubisoft, they are right now out there with Watch Dogs 2 making a big splash with preview copies and stuff, but I don't see them having like final review copies available until probably day of because that is a very complex game and one where the first one where they put out and it got pretty crappy reviews, not crappy, just middling reviews as it was a game that was kind of very much in flux.
So I think that's going to bring us to just remind everybody again about our Extra Life campaign on October 29th. I wanted to kind of go over some of the things that we have finalized, some things that we've decided that we wanted to make you guys aware of. I think we're going to get a lot of donations on the day because of the things that we have decided we're going to do, including team fundraising goals. So for every $500 that we raise, we're going to perform a raffle for great video games and spin our WheelDecide.com random picker. Which is going to be...
how do you make a... I was like, I'll do the Vanna White. No, let's actually just pretend I'm carrying the wheel out. Okay, we're good. Okay, we got the wheel.
That was the thing that happened.
It's a video podcast. Someone has to, you know, bring in the hits, okay?
All right. So basically what it is, it's going to be like a Wheel of Fortune wheel that's going to be populated with a whole bunch of games that we're going to be able to play.
What do I do with my hands? I don't know.
And every time that we hit another $500, then we are going to give away some games. We're going to spin the wheel. It's going to be a lot of fun. And that's going to dictate what we're going to play after that wheel spin. So it could be that we're switching games every 30 minutes. It could, if we do really well, it could be that we're switching every couple hours. We'll just have to see. That's going to be totally dictated by you guys. So we don't actually have a set gaming schedule this year. So this is the first year that we are actually going to be doing this, where we don't say like from, you know, 10 a.m. to noon, we're playing Warcraft. And then from noon until 2, we're playing Heroes. So it's going to be basically up to you guys how often we switch games. So yeah. I think it's going to be really, really fun. And speaking of what is up to you guys, Ryan, do you want to talk about our audience participation rewards?
So like each donation helps the kids, helps us reach our goal, but we wanted to make it a little more enticing for folks who want to maybe donate multiple times throughout the evening, or you know, want to join us on stream, want to see us play a particular, I don't know, scary game. It's going to be Halloween in a couple days.
Don't give them any ideas, Ryan.
Because I want to give them as many ideas.
I feel like there's a game that's on the tip of your tongue, and I just don't.
It's the game that shall not be named, and we all have that game if people dig deep enough. So don't go looking at our archives. But anyways, yes, donate $10 and up, and you have an entry into the next raffle. So when we spin the wheel, when we get to $500, we'll do a raffle draw. We don't know really how it's going to work. We just know that we have some great prizes, and each year we make a list of prizes, and then we never give them away because we're too busy playing games. So this should work this time. So you guys can get some awesome video games that maybe you could play alongside us. Donate $20, and you can add a game to our lovely wheel, which I've, for some reason... done that again.
It's the wheel of deciding.
It's the wheel. I'm bringing it out. And you want to mention the game in the comment of your donation. So when you make a donation, there's a little message. Just tell us which game you want us to play. And that does stack. So if you want to stack the wheel with, I don't know, Jocelyn, what's a game? I'm not going to say it. I'm throwing it to you. Name a game.
If you really want to watch us play Overwatch, then you could donate $100 and have Overwatch added to the wheel 5 times. So it's basically all up to you how much you want us to play our game or play your game and kind of stack the odds of the wheel in your favor. So those are going to be, again, in $20 increments. So make sure that if you are donating to Extra Life and you donate more than $20, then let us know what game you want added for each $20 increment. We do have one more if you are a big donator, Ryan.
Yeah, so $50 gets you the chance, not the chance, gets you on the stream. You can play a game with us. Just mention the game in the donation comment. We'll play that game with you when it pops up. Say we're playing Heroes at the time. Maybe it didn't land on the wheel. Maybe we're just playing it because that's what we felt like. You can then jump in and, I don't know, get your Murlocs on. I don't know. I'm all over it.
But yeah, so basically the joining us on stream works two different ways. You can either take the chance and because as we mentioned, we don't actually have a schedule. So if you're planning on spending the whole time with us, then just let us know what title you want to play. The other way it could possibly work is if you're like, okay, I want to get on stream right now. I need to jump into the game with you guys. Just let us know and let us know by putting the title that we're currently playing into your comment. So make use of those comments on our Extra Life donation page. You can go to bit.ly/TGI Extra Life 2016 to donate. That's going to be all over the place. We're going to be streaming right here on twitch.tv/amovetv this coming Saturday. So make sure that you join us and donate on the day. It's going to be a lot of fun. Like we said, we are rewarding audience participation pretty heavily this year. So we're going to see how our Extra Life campaign goes. We're actually already at over $500 raised. So we will be spinning the wheel right off the top of the show. So it's going to be a good way to kick things off this year, I think. So
yeah, so get your games in there, because I don't think we have anything technically to add to the wheel. It's been a lot of those donations are actually for from Zombies Ate My Podcast fans. So I have to watch every Resident Evil movie, including the one coming out in theaters in January. it's going to be great. Great. Yep.
And I think one of the other donations came from my mom. So I asked her and she's like, I don't know. I don't care. Just for kids. So
a manager at work who donated to me said basically like, have you ever played Mega Man 2? And I'm like, no. It's like, okay, I want you to play that. So I'll probably play that before we stream, because he says I don't need to watch you play because he won't be watching. But yeah, so if anyone has any multiplayer games and you're looking to donate, yeah, get some games in there. We might just populate the wheel with the games we had in the back of our head, and then maybe that's the first one we play.
Yeah, that's what we should mention, is that we do have a list of, I believe, 8, maybe 10 games, which include, I think, Warcraft, Heroes of the Storm, Overwatch, Dead by Daylight, Rocket League. I feel like, yeah, there's a couple more. I don't actually have the doc open in front of me. Did I say Heroes already? I can't remember. But there's, four Blizzard titles, and then a couple of other multiplayer games. Oh, Depth. Multiplayer games basically that we've played in the past that were really popular. So that's going to start the population of the wheel. So then you guys can add other games to that, or you can, you know, beef up if you really want to go see us fail in a dungeon on Mythic 2 in Warcraft or something. Then, you know, you can load that up. You can load up the wheel with Warcraft. It's going to be all up to you guys. But yeah, we will have a base set of games on the wheel, and then you guys can add to that. So I'm excited. It's going to be a really great day on Saturday again. Yeah. twitch.tv/amovetv starting at 10 a.m Eastern, and that is October 29th, so it is this coming Saturday. Don't miss it. That's going to do it for us tonight. You can visit us on the web at gamersinpodcast.com. You can also find us on AMovetv along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, The Angry Chicken, and Embrace the Spoilers. Speaking of, Embrace the Spoilers currently has a Kickstarter going. You can go to bit.ly/backETS if you would like to hear Garrett and I cover the winter movie season. There's all sorts of really cool bonus stretch goals up there as well. So yeah, if you want to see more Embrace the Spoilers content outside of our current Westworld coverage, then that is the best way to go and support the show. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at RMurphy. And don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/AMoveTV. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about advanced review copies going to the press or your experiences in Civ 6, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. Thanks for staying at The Gamers Inn, and we will see you on Saturday.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.